Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi everyone, I'm David. I support Gen X Grown Up on Patreon, and you should too. Don't you want to keep this great content coming? So you know what to do. Go to genxgrownup.com/Patreon and just do it.
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up. Your dinner cannot just be French fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown up. Welcome back, Gen X Grown Up podcast listener, to this backtrack edition of the Gen X Grown Up podcast. I am John. Joining me, as always, is George.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
And of course, Mo is here.
Hey, everybody.
Since first being published in the 19th century, Dickens' A Christmas Carol has been dramatized and adapted hundreds of times. In this backtrack, we'll be highlighting some of the most notable versions of this timeless Christmas classic from our Gen X youth. Before we get into that festive topic, though, it is time for some fourth listener email. And since this is a Christmas-themed backtrack releasing right around Christmas time, I thought appropriate to pick up another fourth listener email about a Christmas movie. This is from David S., and he writes in, 8-bit Christmas as a subject line.
Okay.
The thing I still haven't watched.
I haven't watched it
yeah,
either.
Right? Oh, have you not? Not yet? Really?
Still haven't.
Yeah.
You're missing out.
Christmas Eve.
I've got some days before Christmas. Back
yeah,
off.
Me too.
Okay, right. Well, you have to watch Frosty and you have to watch Rudolph. You got to pack it in with all the others now. So
yeah. Well, plus I've got like 8 episodes of The Office that have Christmas themes that I have to watch too.
Ah.
Then we have to do that Jefferson. Then we've got to run through WKRP, all the other right now. Anyway, here's what David has to say. He says, I watched 8-Bit Christmas on HBO Max with my entire family last night, and we loved it.
Yeah.
It's targeted at Gen Xers on the younger end, but it's close enough.
Okay.
He says it's almost a full-length Nintendo promotion, but the crappiness of the Power Glove created the main crisis in the movie, so that showed some artistic independence.
Spoilers!
What? You thought there'd be a Nintendo movie without the Power Glove? Get real.
I didn't know it was a Nintendo movie.
You see the trailer?
I just knew it was called 8-Bit Christmas.
Okay. In the opening frames, you'll know it's a Nintendo movie, so watch
okay.
out. Yeah. I don't know if that was product placement or what, but they don't just talk about how great Nintendo is. It's more about the quest for Nintendo, but it definitely dig into that, but they dog on the Power Glove pretty hard too, so that's fun. David goes on to say, the movie feels like a mashup of A Christmas Story, The Goonies, shut up you two, don't know bro about The Goonies, I know. And
yeah,
there they are.
You just beat me to it, okay. And
retro gaming. They really nailed the 80s vibe, and it even tugged on the heartstrings without getting cheesy.
Oh, cool.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. The great thing about this movie, and probably the last time we'll talk about it for another year, is that all the things you think are going to happen at the end don't. They do it differently, like this predictable, and they don't give you the predictable ending, which I really appreciated, and it made it all the better.
Oh, okay.
So David wraps up saying, anyway, I think it's a new holiday classic, at least for Gen Xers.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
You might be right. Time will tell. Keep up the great work and happy holidays, David.
Very cool.
Thanks, David.
Well, I'm definitely going to watch it now.
Oh, for sure. I mean, everybody I've talked to, nobody
sometime
hates
before,
it.
Between now and Christmas.
Yes.
Which Christmas, though, George? We know you have
I
all the office to watch.
Say.
You didn't say.
Leaving that option open.
Huh?
Thanks so much, David, for writing in. We love it every time the fourth listener takes time to write in. If you'd like your email featured here on the show, it's so easy. Just hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We read every single one, and most of them, just like David's, make the show. All right. No bah humbugs here. We are getting in to the meat of this Christmas Carol backtrack right after the break. Stick around.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Be sure to subscribe to or follow Gen X Grown Up wherever you listen. And while you're there, rate and review the show too. It helps more than you know.
damn your Merry Christmas. Ebenezer!
You will be haunted by three spirits.
I am the ghost of Christmas present.
Show me no more.
Why, you delight in torturing me!
Will Tiny Tim live?
Patrick Stewart and Hallmark Entertainment bring you the most spectacular telling of A Christmas Carol.
Can you forgive a stupid old man?
Reawaken the spirit of Christmas. A Christmas Carol. Look for it on video cassette and DVD.
God bless us, everyone.
We are talking in this backtrack all about adaptations of the classic Charles Dickens story, A Christmas Carol. Before we get into the adaptations of it, though, I thought real briefly, just in case you live under a rock and don't know, A Christmas Carol was... So I learned, the one thing I did learn here is that it's not called A Christmas Carol. Right. It was originally called A Christmas Carol in Prose, Being a Ghost Story of Christmas.
Yeah, I think that's a bit long.
Yeah, that sounds longer than the whole story.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm glad it's called A Christmas Carol.
Yeah, I like A Christmas Carol.
Yep. It was a novella written by Charles Dickens, published in 1843, all the way back in the 19th century. The general synopsis is it recounts the story of Ebenezer Scrooge, an elderly miser who is visited by the ghost of his former business partner, Jacob Marley, and the spirits of Christmas past, present, and yet to come. After their visit, Scrooge is transformed into a kinder, gentler man. And that's just a long way to say that Scrooge is a grade A asshole about Christmas, and it takes supernatural monsters to convince him otherwise. I think, is that fair?
It's a redemption story.
It's redemption.
It is. It is. It reminds me a lot, after watching all these, preparing for the show, reminds me a lot of that Jefferson's episode we alluded to and we talked about last year, about a grump who actually turns out to have a heart in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's probably where 90% of those stories got their inspiration from. You know, Christmas is, you know, it's either going to be about two things, the birth of Christ or some kind of redemption thing or some kid getting presents that maybe he didn't really deserve. That's your basic three Christmas stories.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much fits all the categories, right?
Yeah. Yep. The one thing I always had against this thing, though, it's like, it seems like you could be an asshole for like 50 years and then be nice the last five, and that's all they care about.
I mean, who cares about the people making the change in the afterlife?
Well, the people like, oh, Scrooge is a great man. Oh. We're all going to his funeral. I'm like, he basically tortured this poor guy for decades and like, oh, now he's nice. We'll be nice to him. I'm like, I don't know if the real world works that way, but okay.
It's pretty much. Yeah, it does. That's pretty much the news cycle right
now. It does. Yeah. You've got to be able to redeem yourself. Otherwise, why would you ever get better? You've got to respect people that change. I think that's okay.
But what about the person who's been nice the entire time?
People have incredibly short-term memories.
Okay. Anyway.
Apparently the people in this story do, but that's okay for them.
True.
So the first one we're going to talk about is not the most Gen X of them all, but it's one we wanted to highlight. And it's also the most straight adaptation. And this is the 1999 film called A Christmas Carol. But aside from the fact that it's a straight adaptation, one of the reasons we picked it is because it stars Patrick Stewart in the lead role of Ebenezer Scrooge, our Star Trek captain of fame.
Well, and I think the reason why we consider this a loosely tied Gen X story is because Patrick Stewart first did a one-man play of A Christmas Carol back in 88.
Mm-hmm.
So that puts it more in the Gen X realm than maybe a 1999 movie. Now, this movie is a full cast, full production movie. It's not the one-man play, which is what I really wanted to watch and still have never gotten to see. John, I don't know. Did you ever get to go see it? Because you're kind of a theater geek guy.
I am, but I never got to go see that. He continued to perform it throughout the 2000s. Yeah. And I think he performed it for like 9/11 victims' families.
Yeah,
in like 2005, he did it again. He does like 40 characters in that. But it got so many accolades that they said, hey, why don't you just do this for our TV movie? It wasn't even a theatrical release. This was on TNT.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a TNT movie, it's damn good, actually.
Oh, yeah. It's a high quality production for sure.
Yeah, they definitely spent money on it. I'm kind of torn between high quality production and it's damn good. I'm not sure I agree with the second part.
Okay. Maybe not damn good. All right. Well, Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 72%, which is not too shabby.
That's not awful.
It's right on the border. And I would probably agree with that. Maybe a little lower. But compared to the other ones we're going to look at later in the show, again, this is such a vanilla, straight-laced, by-the-book version of A Christmas Carol.
Yeah, it is.
In many ways, not a lot jumps out. But also, there's not much to dislike if you like the Christmas Carol story in the first place.
Yeah. As we're going to talk, we've got four that we're going to talk about specifically in this broadcast. Although there are hundreds, maybe even 1,000 or more adaptations of this original story in different formats. But I can only really think that two of the actors stood out to me at all. Patrick Stewart, obviously, because he's Patrick Stewart and he's going to act the shit out of almost anything he does. But even he felt a bit, I don't know, stifled in this role.
Hmm.
But he and Bob Cratchit, the actor who played Bob Cratchit, they were really the only two that I cared about at all in this adaptation. I didn't, the ghosts weren't anything big to me. The Marley character was, just didn't really care about any of them.
Yeah, it wasn't an all-star cast, to be sure.
Yeah. I mean, Patrick Stewart was like definitely pretty much it as far as like big names in it. I mean, there were a couple other people that were like B-level kind of stuff. But I don't know. I mean, I liked it. And I think mostly because one, it, like you said earlier, John, it's like it's the most true to the original story. So it had a lot of scenes that I think the other stories kind of cut out because they maybe were a little too dark or too heavy.
Yeah. Or for time constraints or any number of reasons. Sure.
Yeah. It's like, I think the one that you actually see like Tiny Tim, his dead body, like the dad crying over it, you know, which was pretty heavy.
That was in none of the other adaptations I've ever seen.
I've never seen that one before. It's always used a crutch by the fireplace, right? And that's it.
Yeah. You know? Crutch and cap and chair. That's it.
Yep. That's it. So I just thought it was a pretty good adaptation. But, you know, there's one part of this, though, that confused me. And I don't know if you guys caught this or not. Okay. When Marley visits him and he's describing the three ghosts coming to visit, right?
Yeah.
He makes it sound like they're going to come over three different nights.
He does. I did notice that.
And the last one, he says, and the third one will appear at midnight. I'm like, wait a minute, but the other one showed at one. So I was very confused by that. So I'm not the only one?
No, no. And I've always understood Christmas Carol to be that all of these events take place Christmas Eve.
That's what I thought. And
then Christmas Day, he wakes up, go get me a turkey kid, and let me take it over to Bob Cratchit.
Or Goose Kid, depending on
adaptation. So I don't understand. I've never read the original novella. I will say that the one thing this TV adaptation film made me want to do is go read the novella because I wanted to find out now a little bit more just what's really in the story and what isn't and what's been adapted and changed. It did give me that interest. Other than that, I didn't get much out of this movie.
Okay. I thought the Marley ghost was super creepy.
Oh, with the jaw that's hanging off? I mean, that was weird.
That was a little weird. Yeah.
It was weird. Yeah. But George, you mentioned something in watching this one. This is the last one I watched in preparation for the show. And seeing this one, as I was seeing beats, you talked about kid, go get me a turkey and like lines like, you know, boil him in his own pudding and a clove of a steak of holly through his heart. All those things. It's funny how in all of these, they've almost used verbatim the dialogue, every single one of these. Now they add in songs or they add in other chit chat, but they're not just taking story beats. I was seeing the exact same lines of dialogue used over and over and over because they're so iconic. Not just God bless us, everyone, from beginning to end, you're seeing the same exact lines used, whether it's cartoons or puppets or Patrick Stewart or whoever. Nobody's rewriting it because Charles Dickens just did it right in the first place, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's they're just picking and choosing which ones to include in their particular adaptation because some of them, like you said, will have this and some of them will have that. I think the only common line throughout all of them is the God bless us everyone line.
Yeah, that one's reliable.
But it's also slightly varied a little bit in some of the adaptations. I mean, it's God bless us everyone and then sometimes it's God bless us all. And So I've seen different versions, but it's kind of the same gist every time.
Yeah.
I think you're right. It's Dickens did it really well. Why spend a whole bunch of time rewording stuff?
Yeah.
Spend your time on the other production value stuff that you want to do.
But one thing I saw that also I thought was very interesting, which I've never seen in any adaptation, it was the Ghost of Christmas Present, that he gets older during the time. And at the end, like before he leaves, he's actually like really old. And he has those kids living under his robes who are Doom and Runt.
Ostensibly, like I'd never realized until I saw this one that he's only supposed to live for one day, just Christmas Day.
He only lives for the day of Christmas.
Because he's only in the present.
Right.
Yeah.
They did that in a couple of these other ones we're going to talk about.
That he grew old? I don't remember.
Yes. Didn't call attention to it. I didn't notice it. Maybe they didn't talk about it either. It was shorter.
John, they very much paid attention to it in your favorite style of adaptation, the one that we're going to talk about later. Yes.
Okay.
All right. I missed it. Rewatch it.
Cool.
This thing got a primetime Emmy nomination. And again, I think for the time, for the late 90s, it was pretty high caliber for
a television
movie. So that's understandable. You know, and all of it was fine. It was, again, I said a little bit vanilla. I liked it okay. But the thing that bothered me, and that made me the most uncomfortable, for the Shakespearean actor that Patrick Stewart is, there's supposed to be this transformation where after the ghosts are done, he learns again how to laugh. He's like, it's uncomfortable in his chest. And he's going, ha, 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 ha. Like he can't figure out how to laugh. And I'm just wincing for him. I'm like, that is so weird and so awkward. And he looks so surprised doing it. Like, ha, 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 I'm laughing again. I'm like, just dial it back. We get it. We get what you're trying to go for.
Yeah, I thought he did a better job in Moe's favorite Dune adaptation than he did in this.
Oh, no, he didn't.
Maybe he was upset that a bunch of other actors stole his one-man show down from him.
A lot of respect for the guy, though.
He couldn't do all the parts. He had to do just his one.
That brings up a great point, though. Had they just filmed his one-man adaptation, I think it would still be being talked about today. If that had got aired on TV,
I'd agree. Yep.
That would have been 100 times better than what they presented us with, and they would have saved a crap ton of money doing it.
People are still talking about it. I mean, look what just happened with Hamilton. Just take a stage production and record it professionally. Oh, yeah. I think that would have been awesome. I don't know if they ever released that as a video. I have the audio recording of it, but I mean, that's what got his foot in the door to record this one in the first place, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's a serviceable version, and it's a good baseline, I think, to then leap off to talk about the other three that we have lined up.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listenersurvey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Gen X Grown Up. But if you have a friend who's not yet listening, why not? Tell them about us. They'll thank you later.
Oh, what a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas!
Just another excuse for being lazy.
Bells are ringing,
Merry Christmas. And a bah humbug to you.
Merry Christmas Day. Oh, what a Merry
Christmas is a time for giving, a time to be with one's family.
Oh, my, look at all the wonderful things to eat.
So let's talk about a real Gen X version, which is actually, I really liked it, which was a Mickey's Christmas Carol.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Came out in 1983, animated. I really enjoyed it. When I was watching it again, I just smiled throughout this whole thing. I don't know why. It's just, there's a certain charm it has to it. I think it's still, to this day, still has.
It's a much lighter version of the story.
Yeah. It is. For sure. Yeah. It's only 26 minutes long.
Which made it easy to watch.
But it was easy to watch. I thought they successfully packed the absolutely all of the major points of the story into that time. It didn't feel that rushed to me.
No,
now, knowing the story, you can say, oh, they could have, you know, they could have expanded here and here and here, but they packed it together well, and it didn't feel rushed, and it delivered on the entire story, and I thought they did a great job. Well, Rotten Tomatoes, 100% with the critics.
Wow.
90% with the audience. Not surprising.
That's high, too. Holy cow.
That's great. Yeah.
I think that, for me, this was the most successful translation of the storyline to a modern audience, including young and old. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of the other ones did as good a job of getting the novella across to both groups at the same time. And I think this one did it in a, I don't know, a more enjoyable fashion.
Yeah, I think I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on that. But
I liked one of the other ones a lot better, but I think they did a really great job of condensing it down.
Why do you disagree, Mo? What are you thinking?
No, I'm just saying, like, the next one we're going to talk about, I think also did a pretty good job with that as well for hitting two levels of audiences. But we'll get to that later. We'll talk about that later.
I think this one was better than the one we're going to talk about next. That's probably why I think that.
Okay. So interestingly enough, this version, the Mickey's Christmas Carol, is an animated interpretation of another adaptation of A Christmas Carol, because first, in 1974, they put out a Disneyland long-playing record called A Christmas Carol by the Disneyland Players, and it was characters, and that marked the first time that we heard that actor portraying Scrooge McDuck with that, you know, now signature Scottish accent associated with the cartoons and everything going forward. That was the beginning of him. And of course, who else are you going to have play Scrooge but Scrooge McDuck? Playing Ebenezer Scrooge, right. Who else would you pick? Anyone else would be a total oversight.
You know, I actually had thought that Scrooge McDuck was created from this show. Like, I thought he originally came from this.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that he was created back in 1947 for a comic strip.
He was created based on the character, absolutely.
Right.
But not for this show.
Yeah,
right.
Not for this show. I thought he started with the show, to be quite honest. And when I did the research, I was like, holy crap, I'm like, okay, well, that was an easy fit.
Because I remember him early on from Disney cartoons and stuff before this came out. So I had seen him a long time. And when rewatching this Christmas, Christmas Carol before, you know, the credits even start. You're like, okay, I know who's going to be Scrooge. I know who's going to be Bob Cratchit.
Yeah.
You kind of knew, like, immediately, okay, Jiminy Cricket has to be one of the ghosts.
Yeah, right. Of course. Well, one of the most fun things in this Mickey's Christmas Carol is who they pick to play the characters that you know. Because they're taking existing animated characters and plugging them in. You said Jiminy Cricket absolutely had to be. I loved it was loaded with Mr. Toad characters.
Yeah.
Little-known Disney franchise. Remember Mr. Toad's Wild Ride?
Oh, yeah. Which is now gone.
It was one of my favorite rides at Disney World. It's now gone. But I saw them throughout this. Toad himself was Fezziwig. Mm-hmm. The Ratty and Moly characters were the guys that came around collecting, the beginning, collecting for the poor.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe they were in there. I'm like, perfect. Of course you got to have those guys in there.
Didn't they have the Weasels, too, or like digging up his grave or something?
The Weasels were the grave diggers.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're right. Yep. The Weasels in there. Yeah.
And I was going to bring up, we talked earlier that the only thing we know about Tiny Tim's death scenes usually is chair, cap, and crutch. But in this case, we did actually have a nice little scene, kind of a tearjerker, where Mickey and his family are standing over Tiny Tim's grave.
Oh, that's right.
We did. It's true.
Yeah,
we did. Mrs. Mickey, she herds the other children off, and Mickey is still standing there with the cane in his hand. That's a good little tearjerker for a cartoon.
Oh, big time. Oh, yeah, for sure.
The thing that really is interesting to me is that you mentioned this one is really good, George, for both adults and for kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that is unlike the actual novella and, of course, the Straight Lace adaptation we talked about from 99. This is loaded with Disney ha-has, little funny moments that are, they feel a little out of place in A Christmas Carol, but they feel perfectly in place with these Disney characters. So it doesn't feel that jarring, even though it's a bit off tone. Specifically, like one that jumped out at me was Goofy, who plays Marley, the ghost of Marley, right? Yeah. He's dumb, just like Goofy. So they mapped a dumbness. The Marley character is not a dope, right? But Goofy's playing it, and he's like, I'm doomed here for eternity, maybe longer. it's so dopey, and you get little giggles, but you're like, okay, he's still a ghost. He's still telling the story. It didn't break anything.
No.
But they did add little Disney smiles in there that was a nice touch to keep it light.
I think his doorknob morph was my favorite of all the doorknobs.
What did it do? Remind me.
Because he morphs into Goofy's face, and then Scrooge squeezes his nose. He's like, ouch. And
that's right.
And I can see me as a little kid just cracking up when Goofy gets his nose squeezed. And then later on in the scene, he's like kind of touching his nose like, is that okay? Did he break my nose?
Oh, right. Yep. Yep.
I think it was Christmas Carol, but it still felt very much like a Disney cartoon.
Yeah,
it
did. Of course.
Like they definitely kept it. Like you watch, like you knew you're watching. I mean, even outside the characters, it just felt just very much like a Disney cartoon.
Yeah, I know this is a favorite of a lot of people, and they do a lot of animation of A Christmas Carol. It's easy to adapt. Yeah. I mean, Rankin Bass did one. They did Mr. Magoo did one.
Yeah,
remember that one. Jim Backus from Gilligan's Island. Bugs Bunny had one where Yosemite Sam was Scrooge. The Flintstones had a Christmas Carol special. Everybody did it. But those all felt, even though they were mapping the characters onto A Christmas Carol, unlike those, this one doesn't feel forced. I mean, I think it starts with the fact you have a Scrooge character in the universe already. Scrooge McDuck makes it easy. But just for whatever reason, the others, they just felt like an episode of Bugs Bunny or an episode of Mr. Magoo with a Christmas Carol story. This felt like an original story, even though it was just a little, 30-minute special.
The other ones felt like, hey, we need a Christmas one, for Bugs Bunny. What do we do?
Oh, yeah, let's
do
a Christmas episode. Right. I don't write anything original. Just grab a Christmas Carol off the shelf and let's adapt it.
Which one of the three type of Christmas movies are we going to do this week?
That's right. The three you just said. It's going to be the Redemption. Is it going to be the Gift? Exactly. Just lay it out. It's Christmas Carol. All right. We get back. We're getting into my favorite adaptation of A Christmas Carol. So stick around.
Wonder why.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes. And luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
Each episode of Gen X Grown Up has show notes loaded with links where you can learn more about our topics. And there's even more to see and hear over at genxgrownup.com.
Bah, humbug.
He was the greediest man alive.
It's Ebenezer Scrooge.
Until the night he met someone extraordinary.
Hello.
The Muppet Christmas Carol.
I'll drink to Mr.
Mr. Scrooge, even though he is odious, stingy, and badly dressed.
Humbug.
Oh, there goes Mr. Humbug. There goes Mr. Grimm.
Do you think it's safe for us to be up here?
If they gave a prize for being mean, the winner would be him.
Yes, Mr. Crouch.
I had promised we were going to get next into my favorite adaptation of A Christmas Carol, and you know me, it has to be one that features Muppets. We're talking the Muppet Christmas Carol, yeah. Any excuse to talk about puppets on the show.
It's Muppets or Bigfoot, and I don't know that they've done a Bigfoot Christmas Carol yet.
Oh, they should, though. They totally should.
Let's get Netflix to green light that right away.
Yeah, they will.
So this was released in 1992. The Muppet characters tell their version of the classic tale of an old and bitter miser's redemption on Christmas Eve. Muppets were cast in all of the primary roles in this special, except the primary role of Ebenezer Scrooge, for which they got Michael Caine as Scrooge.
That's amazing.
It's something.
No, I see. I'm with you, John. This is my favorite. Or is this it? One of my favorites. It's in my top list for sure.
Well, that's good because we've only got four to choose from.
Well, yeah. But even across all the other ones. Because I just love the fact that when Michael Caine was in it, he played it straight. Like, he didn't play it like he was in the cast with Muppets, I didn't think. I think he played it like you would play any role.
You're right. And that's my only real problem with this. I wish Michael Caine was not in this.
Oh, really?
Because I read, as I was researching here, I'm like, I observed when watching, is Michael Caine in the same movie as the Muppets? Like, it seems so odd and detached. And they said when he agreed to play it, he said, I'm going to play this straight as if I am in a Shakespearean production of A Christmas Carol. Whatever the Muppets want to do around me is fine. But even he didn't stick to that. So he just felt so dry and so serious when the Muppets are having a good time around him. It felt a little disconnected to me.
So we were talking a little bit about this before we started recording, Mo, John and I were.
Yep.
My take on Michael Caine is, yes, he tried to play it straight-laced, but there were multiple times where either the director wanted him to or he chose himself to fall out of that Shakespeare straight-laced role and do some definitely goofy Muppet type of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, there's this one scene where they're doing the song because this is, you know, a musical. It's the only of the four that is a musical. And he's dancing with the lead singer. Like, they're both kind of dancing back and forth. La, 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 la. And I'm like, that's not Shakespeare, dude. How are you going to give me an hour 15 of Shakespeare and then 15 of I'm goofy on a Muppet set? I didn't feel like he delivered his role nearly as well as Patrick Stewart did. And I'm not saying Patrick Stewart did a tremendous, outstanding job just because he's Patrick Stewart.
But he was consistent, at least.
But he was consistent. Right? And I don't think Michael Caine was. Now, I mentioned about the musical part. The Muppet song Scrooge, that's one of the first songs in the film. As soon as that started, that's when it brought back the flood of memories for me of watching this when I was younger. I remembered the cadence of the song. I remembered some of the lyrics. I didn't remember any of the singing until I'm starting to watch them, but that song really drove it home. And I'm like, oh, crap, that's right. This is a musical. And I think they were clever doing
that. All Muppet movies are.
Yeah, most of them, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
I thought they were clever doing it that way.
Well, I mean, so this one is also pretty well regarded. I mean, Rotten Tomatoes critics give it 76. Audience gives it 86.
That's pretty
appropriately enough. I'm in the audience that would give it 90 something, but that's okay. Interestingly, this is the first major Muppet production after Jim Henson's untimely death. Yeah, in the early 90s.
They start the movie with dedicated.
They do. Yeah. Dedication.
Instead of being at the end, like a lot of movies or TV shows, it was right up front.
This was Steve Whitmire. He stepped into the role of Kermit, both the puppeteering and the voice for the first time in this.
I thought he did a wonderful job.
He did an admirable job. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, in the spirit. Like the other one we were talking about with Mickey, some of the most fun they have is who they cast of the existing Muppet characters into the other roles. And I thought, not only as a character, as a fun-loving character of Fezziwig, oh my God, casting Fozzie as Fozziwig for that role? So it's perfect casting, but it's also the name matches and they renamed him Fozziwig. I thought that was hilarious. And the other adaptation I thought was really clever was they changed his partner Marley into Brothers Marley and reused Statler and Waldorf.
Oh my God, that was
the
so
critics
funny.
From the balcony as the initial ghosts who come to tell him the other ghosts are coming. And I thought that was a great idea. Like, you start, who are the best kind of like grumpy old guys you could get? Stoudemire Waldorf. But that was great.
Yeah, great use.
There's something else this adaptation has that none of the other three have.
Mm.
An in-scene reliable narrator. Gonzo is Dickens with Rat the Rizzo
as
his assistant.
I did like that.
Yes.
You don't have that in any of the other adaptations. You have a voiceover at the end of the Patrick Stewart one done by Fred. The nephew.
Right. He was as good as his word and better or whatever.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, they even call attention to the fact that when Michael Caine is going to deal with the ghost of Christmas yet to come or whatever they call him, the two narrators say, "This is too scary for us, kids. We're stepping away." Yep. They'll be back in the finale.
Yep. Yeah.
I thought that was another clever little device that nobody else used in any of the other ones that we reviewed for this podcast. And
I 100% agree. Yep.
I don't know how you get a better one than Gonzo. He's perfect. And Rizzo the Rat was great as his sidekick. And they even use them in the scene. There's segments where they get knocked around by other characters. So they're not just
they're part of
not
the detached
thing.
From the world. Right.
Yeah.
They're above it kind of, but they're
still
in it.
Phase through doors. You know, the door gets closed on them. They're like, crap, we got to watch it from outside.
Right. They have to clean the glass to see through it.
Yeah.
Oh, one thing I want to say about the music is that I didn't realize until recently that Paul Williams did the music for this thing.
Mm.
And for you younger folks out there who don't know who he is, I mean, he has a huge slew of credits like in pop music back in the 60s and 70s, I would guess, right? Probably more so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did songs for the Carpenters and for Barbra Streisand. I mean, he has a very good pedigree for doing music.
You're not endearing our audience to this guy by calling those people out very much.
Calling who out?
Well, no. The Carpenters have really just begun. That was by him.
I'm talking about the younger kids. You were saying your younger kids don't know.
Oh, the kids.
There's no way that's going to help them any to get to know
you
this person.
You whippersnappers.
Oh, if they don't know who Barbra Streisand or the Carpenters are, then they could go to hell.
Wow.
Because,
a generation.
All right.
That's like me not knowing who Fred Astaire is just because I didn't grow up with him.
Okay. Apparently, you can go to hell if you don't know who Fred Astaire is.
That's right.
Sorry, youngsters. Mo would like you to go to hell.
That's right. Because if you don't know, you should know who at least those two are.
Well, there was one other one that I want to call out in this movie. John, this is a Muppets film, right?
Of course.
So we've got Kermit the Frog. We got Miss Piggy. Mm-hmm. We've got Fozzie Bear, as you said. But they didn't just use Muppet puppets.
No,
Sprocket
absolutely not.
From Fraggle Rock is in this movie.
I love Sprocket.
I love Sprocket. Wait,
he was in the background. He didn't have a major role, but he was there, right?
He was there. Like, so the very first time, it's one of the opening credit scenes, and he pops out of a little window Batman style.
Yes. Oh,
and
yeah.
And then
later
on, during one of the sing-alongs, he's dancing around with the other characters and apparently singing. I didn't know Sprocket could sing. I thought all he could say was woof, but
he could do that.
Yeah, apparently he can.
I loved that they used other characters from other Muppety devices.
The whole Jim Henson world, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially in the ghost, I noticed. The Ghost of Christmas Present was one of those full body Muppets, and for all the world, he looked like a repurposed Gorg from Fraggle Rock. Also, along with Sprocket, right? And the Ghost of Christmas Past, who's always kind of like a fairy, was like that kind of white puppet, looked a lot like a Dark Crystal style Muppet in many ways.
A little bit.
It wasn't like all the other Muppets. So they used a variety of things from the workshop to satisfy what otherwise in the Muppet world would be weird looking characters. Well, these are ghosts and spirits. Why not use these odd out of world Muppets? I thought that was a great use of that.
Oh, absolutely.
Now I got to call something out from an earlier segment.
Okay.
So Mo was talking about that the one Christmas present was the first one he noticed that grew old.
Yeah.
The puppet that you just mentioned, do you guys not remember Michael Caine and him walking over to the bench and Michael Caine says, "You've gotten older." And then they did the little stardust fade where he disappeared.
Oh, I guess I wasn't paying close enough attention.
I guess I glossed over that one.
He did this whole thing where he faded out of the screen and like they did like really cheap. This is from 92, but just really cheap effect where it was like somebody had videotaped sparkles and then superimposed it over top of him fading out.
Right.
I thought it was a cute, clever way because he did that line again, you know, about come to know me better or whatever it was he kept saying over and over again.
Right.
Yeah.
But it also gave a reference to the fact he said there were 11,000 brothers of his previously or something like that.
Or in the past, right? Thousands.
That's in reference to them living for one day only.
One day
apiece, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
Makes sense.
You mentioned before how the Mickey one had like appeal to kids and adults. Mm-hmm. I totally think this one did as well. There were so many jokes that you talked like at the beginning when there's Fozzie, they're selling the apples and the rat's eating all the apples And his joke is, well, I'm creating scarcity. What kid's going to get that joke? You know, and there were so many of those, like some things definitely geared toward adults, some toward kids, that I think this one also, I think, totally hit it with two levels of humor for both ages.
You know, I would tend to agree with you, Mo, but I think they're, to George's point, they're two different kinds of mass appeal. For Disney, it was just widely accessible as a lighthearted adaptation of A Christmas Carol.
Yes.
Whereas what I like about The Muppet Christmas Carol is what you describe, is that it's almost that wink and nod to the adults that the kids won't get kind of thing. They're playing to two audiences separately, where I think the Mickey's Christmas Carol played well in the middle to both audiences with the same material right down the center. So it's a different way of reaching those two audiences and depends on your preference, maybe which one you like. Both accessible.
I think, too, the joke that you mentioned, Mo, is a good example of why I don't think necessarily each individual joke played to both parties. That joke was clearly intended for an adult, a more adult audience. Like you said, kids aren't going to get scarcity.
Yep.
But if you think about a movie like The Princess Bride, there are lines in that movie that work on both levels. For instance, the I'm going to do him left-handed so I, or otherwise I can't be satisfied.
Right.
That has a whole different meaning to the kids in that scene than it does to the adults in that scene. And I think,
ooh, I never thought of that line like that until you just said it.
Ooh. I didn't either.
What? Okay.
You filthy son of a bee.
I'm not a filthy. They wrote it. How am I the one that's filthy?
Oh, yeah. And I don't disagree with you, George. I just don't think that this makes this a lesser film because they did a different approach to it.
No, I don't think it makes it a lesser film. I think Michael Caine makes this a lesser film.
Oh, okay. Just thought it was funny because I think they just did a good mix of back and forth. The adult jokes are kind of just thrown in there. So I don't think they disrupted it. I remember as a kid, I loved this one, too. You know, I mean, I was a kid. No. I was a teenager. But I remember watching this the first time and I enjoyed it, too. And I just think they said it's two different approaches, like John said.
Yeah, I think. We've got four of them here. This one falls number three for me, but it's extremely close to number two. Number four is the Patrick Stewart one. That's my least favorite of the four that we've chosen. Yeah. But I think this one and the Christmas Carol from Mickey, I think they're really, really close. I think why I like the Christmas Carol from Mickey a little bit more was it was simply a little bit smaller, and I felt like the Scrooge from Mickey was more effective than the Scrooge from the Muppets.
I'll agree with you there. Yep. Scrooge McDuck was a better Scrooge across the board.
Of course, they did create him like directly to be Scrooge.
I wonder why it fits so well. Perfect.
Great casting.
We have gone through three that we're highlighting. We have one more coming up. Stick around because the next one we're going to talk about is probably the most Gen X of the Gen X adaptations we have talked about so far. You don't want to miss that one. We'll be right back after this quick break.
I'm Allison Holland, host of the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. Equipped with a microphone and a long-term fascination of the Kennedy family, I am joined by an incredible cast of experts, friends, and guests to take you on a fun, relaxed, yet informative journey through history and pop culture. From book references to fashion to philanthropy to our modern expectations of the presidency itself, you'll see that there is so much more to Kennedy than just JFK or conspiracy theories. Join me for the Kennedy Dynasty podcast.
If you're a diehard Gen X grown-up, you can pledge your support by clicking join on YouTube or by becoming a patron at genxgrownup.com/patreon.
I got into broadcasting because I like to give.
Hey, that's my cab!
Sometimes I found myself hurting from giving too much.
Fire these people!
But it's Christmas!
Bah humbug.
Are going to be visited by three ghosts. Expect the first one tomorrow at noon.
God, tomorrow's bad for me, Lou.
I'm the ghost.
John got to talk about his favorite. Mo got to talk about his favorite. Now I get to talk about the best of the four adaptations that we're talking about, regardless of it being my favorite.
At least you're not opinionated.
That is 1988's Scrooged, starring Bill Murray. This was by far my favorite Scrooged adaptation. This is the one that I can go back and rewatch and rewatch and rewatch multiple times, far more than any of those. As much as I enjoyed Mickey's Christmas Carol, and I did enjoy the Muppet story, I don't know how many times I'm going to go back and rewatch them. The Mickey one a little bit more, maybe because it's shorter. But if somebody tells me, hey, let's watch a Scrooge Christmas story, this is the one I'm pulling out of the closet every time.
Yeah.
It, to me, is by far the funniest. And it still has segments that bring tears to my eyes. None of the other ones did that for me.
Yeah, true.
Sadly, this did the worst, I think, of our Rotten Tomatoes scores. It got a 69 from critics and a 71 from audience. I'm like, I don't know.
I'm not sure why. Possible.
Yeah, that seems really low.
That's terrible.
And unlike the other ones, this is the one that takes the most departure from the original source material.
It's the most original, for sure.
In names and the story beats are there. The same kind of information comes across, but they change characters. They layer a story on top and around it in the television business that I think is very interesting, particularly fun to me. And they even map that television stuff onto the story in ways. Remember the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come has a screen with bars and static on his face.
Very cool.
Little things like that. And it's just, I mean, Bill Murray as Frank Cross, he's not even Ebenezer Scrooge. He is Ebenezer Scrooge, but he's not by name.
Right.
Bill Murray here. I mean, maybe the only reason somebody could not like this is if they didn't like Bill Murray, but
if
those people
can. If you have a predisposition to hating him,
Maybe. But there's a good movie around there, even if you don't like his style of humor. It's so much good stuff to like about it.
And I want to point out, too, this is the only film that I know of that stars all four of the acting Murray brothers. And I think it was because this movie meant a lot to him. And it was at a era of his career where he could demand these kind of things. I'm putting my brother in this role. I don't care what you guys say.
Yeah, they did a great job, too.
They did, right? His father, that character in that scene in the past, the brother that played his father was perfect. I thought that was really well done. So
for sure. They made changes that you still get the feel of a Hugh Scrooge. Like he wasn't after money, right? He was after power.
Power, yeah.
Instead. Mm-hmm. But it played
well. He wanted to dominate the ratings. He wanted to be
wanted to get the ratings.
Big power
he wanted,
executive.
He wanted the accolades. That's the stuff he was looking for, not the gold coins and stuff
like
that.
He even says something that's a direct in opposition to every other Scrooge. He says at the very beginning of the movie, I love Christmas. I'm the biggest fan of Christmas because people stay home and watch my TV shows.
Right. He likes it because it serves his needs.
Right.
He wants the power. Of course.
Actually, when I rewatched it, I forgot that Karen Allen was in it.
Yeah.
Marion from Indiana Jones. She's the love interest. She's the primary. She's the catalyst that helps to change his heart. Now, of course, the ghost provide a lot of that too, but she's the anchor that brings him back into the real world and the reason why he kind of changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because in a lot of the other stories, it's more about Tiny Tim than it is his former love interest. Now, in some of the other stories, it's his sister that he loves, not in that way, obviously, but his sister that he cares a lot for. But Tiny Tim is usually the focal point of his emotional anchor that holds him in place. Mm-hmm. You're right, though. I think her being in this story, there wasn't even a character really like that, was there, in the other ones?
Yeah, there was a love interest in the past, but not to that
but
depth,
long
though.
Past. It was just a regret that you knew about, but no one that still existed in the present.
Right.
Yeah.
That's one thing I'd love, too, is like I thought all the characters had more layers than all the other adaptations. Bill Murray's character had a lot of layers to it.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
And you kind of saw how he became that person.
This was a modern film and comedy with a Christmas Carol vigorously mapped on top of it.
Right.
It could have been a great film on its own without the Christmas Carol, right?
Well, and a story within a story because TV is putting on Scrooge live around the world, Bethlehem, New York, Los Angeles.
I've got to call out, we talk about who plays Scrooge in each of these. You know, it was Scrooge McDuck or it was Michael Caine. So in this one, obviously, Bill Murray is Scrooge in the movie we're watching, but the Scrooge they picked for their live worldwide production was Buddy Hackett to play Scrooge.
Of all people.
I thought that was wonderful anti-casting to show just how ridiculous this production was, along with the dancers and everything.
They were just going after names, right? Mary Lou Retton was Tiny Tim. I mean, come on. Right. They were just going for
stupid, right?
That was what you would expect an 80s TV exec to come up with.
Oh, yeah. Who
can
we get?
Kids love gymnasts, so we're going to put Mary Lou Retton in this, and she's not going to just say the line. She's going to do a somersault to a backflip into one of these things.
Yep. Right. And the story within a story did have the Dickens narrator, John Houseman, they had as the damn narrator. John Forsythe as the boss, and Robert Mitchum showed up. This was like a who's who of celebrities from like the last generation of film and like all the B and B plus celebrities that were in films around that time, or comedies especially. What a great collection.
It's also the
of
only one with a female Bob Cratchit.
Oh, oh yes, that's right.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. His assistant. Yeah. She's a secretary. Character. She's assistant. She's the female Bob Cratchit. She lives poor. Her whole family's all in one house. He gives her a towel for her Christmas present. That's her bonus because he gives her a hand cloth with it.
Yeah. I think this was actually John Houseman's last role.
And you're right. He passed away shortly before this released, I think.
Yeah, before it was released. Yeah. So, but hey, if you got to go, that's not a bad movie to go out on, in my opinion.
You know, this is also the only adaptation that stars the $6 Million Man. I think that's important to point out.
Oh, my God.
I wondered when that was going to come up.
Yeah, the beginning of that.
The great thing about this movie, when that starts, you don't know that you're watching a Scrooge story.
Right.
Yeah.
You just, what's going on? Santa's workshop and stuff's going on. And then rockets start coming in.
What was the name of the movie?
The Night the Reindeer Died.
That's right. Yeah. Lee Majors, you've been a very good boy this year.
And then I love at the end how it brings you into the world that you're really about to watch, presented this year by IBC.
Right.
And then there's another commercial right after that about Robert Goulet in the swamp, and he's paddling the boat scene. And he looks back at the alligator. He's like, holy shit, they've got a real alligator here. There's some great tongue-in-cheek moments in this film. I think we really kind of ought to talk about some of the major characters. So Bobcat Goldthwait.
Wonderful in here. He's one of those B-plus characters I was talking about. He was in all the comedies. Oh, yeah.
But he's not Bob Cratchit. Mm-mm. He's not really anything that
he's
we
a totally
know from the
original
he's
character.
A yeah. But you care about him so much because they sprinkle his appearances throughout the movie. He gets fired right away because he questions, you know, Bill Murray's decision about the commercial.
Yep. Christmas Eve.
They kick him out. He's drinking his wife or girlfriend because they mess that up. I don't know if you noticed in the movie. At one point, he's talking to himself saying, I wonder if my girlfriend's going to be okay with this. And then later on when he's talking to Murray, he says, my wife threw me out.
Right.
So I think
maybe he has a wife and girlfriend. You don't know.
He might have both.
Yeah.
He might have got kicked out of both houses.
Maybe that's why he got kicked out.
He's always got that little shtick where he's constantly trying to drink and his everything keeps messing up right.
He's knocked out of his hand.
He's having a really bad day.
Yeah. He is. Oh,
and he has some of the best lines too. When he comes back with a shotgun, he's like, honey, I'm home. He does the Bugs Bunny thing. Hello, Wabbit, because he's got the shotgun.
He's like, can I get a running start? He's like, sure. One Mississippi.
Yeah, it's kind of like the 9 to 5 scene where Dolly Parton's chasing down Dabney Coleman, right? It's a very similar.
Yeah. Yes, it is just like that.
Scene.
It feels like that, shot like that, edited like that too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
The character is called Loudermilk, I think is his name. And at some point after the Bill Murray character turns, he calls him the Milkman. Come on with me, Milkman.
Yeah. You and I are going to do this together.
That's right.
Casting of the ghosts in these different adaptations, I think is very important because you know what you're supposed to get with Scrooge. You know what you're supposed to get with the Bob Cratchit character. The ghosts are pretty dry. They're just observers and people who take you around
the other
the
versions,
places.
You mean?
In the, well, just in the story in general, not,
yes,
you know.
Yes, yes, yes. As you're saying.
But in this one, there's no doubt in my mind that they took the ghost casting up a notch. John mentioned the Ghost of Christmas Future with a TV screen and the body with the little creatures inside it. But the two actors who played past and present, David Johansen and Carol Kane, holy shit. Oh my God, are they awesome. David Johansen, who Mo will probably tell all the young listeners to go to hell if they don't know this.
No, I just know that they're smarter than what you think.
Oh, goodness.
Well, he was also a singer, and he went by the stage name of Buster Poindexter at the time. He had the It's Hot, Hot, Hot song.
Yeah, that one song, yeah.
He does such a great job in this movie. I always wondered, why did we only see him in 2 or 3 films in the 80s? He was in this one. He was in another one about a racetrack gambler guy. He wasn't in a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But he's so good.
Yep. Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that he showed up outside of the Scrooge world. He showed up to give Karen Allen a ride in the cab, I think, right?
Yeah,
he pulls up.
Yeah,
need a ride?
Yeah. What floor?
Yeah. She's like, can you get me there in 3 minutes?
Yeah.
He's like, what floor? And Carol Kane as Ghost Christmas Present, to me, was one of the funniest parts of this movie.
Oh,
because he's like stubborn. She's like, I'm going to beat you to submission.
Just beat the living crap out of him.
She is an awesome sadist. And it's a great allegory for what that character is trying to do to Scrooge, right? It's trying to get Scrooge to change his ways. Mm-hmm. And she just says, you know what? you're not going to listen, I'm going to get your attention by punching you in the mouth and kicking you in the nuts. Yep. And that's exactly what she does. Mm-hmm. I also love the device in this one. Ghost of Christmas Past, David Johansen, he's a cabbie and he drives a cab. And the device that they use for taking him back in time is the meter of the cab.
That was cool.
Rolling back the years of his life.
Like a little DeLorean meter on there.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah. That was very cool, I
thought. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really deep.
You mentioned the Ghost of Christmas Future, the big cloaked character that had the screen for a face. That was also something I noted when I watched the film, is how great practical effects were in this older film. Before CG was absolutely huge, he opens up his cloak and there's all those, admittedly, if you pause it, dopey little rubber puppets inside of it. But they're creepy and cool and awesome.
Somebody shaking with a stick or something.
The best practical effect, I thought, was the makeup work done on John Forsythe when he was playing the dead
Marley.
Boss.
Yeah.
Yes.
With his golf bag.
That was great.
And the golf ball out of the back of the skull with the mouse.
Oh, yeah.
With the mouse. Yeah. And he's all like, kind of like, he's been in the grave for a while and he's all kind of flaking off.
His eyes.
And he takes off his glasses, his eyes are rotted out.
And that mouse is another meta reference. Because later on in the film, the president says, wasn't there a dormouse in Scrooge? You know, I always thought there should be. And then there's the mouse coming out of the guy's head in the real Scrooge story that we're supposed to be watching.
Right. Right, and they want him to staple the antlers to the mouse too, right? You're right.
Who has the cojones to do that?
That's right.
They took the ghost, like everything else, like everything had layers to it. You know, the ghost had layers to it. The characters had layers. You know, they all weren't just like very one-dimensional, which I think the original story basically had them.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about the theme for the Muppets. Theme for this one was done by our old buddy Danny Elfman.
Oh, yeah.
So much stuff, right? From Oingo Boingo fame.
Who else from 88? The 80s is going to do this film's theme?
Who else is going to do this? It kind of weird, quirky comedy. Of course you're going to get Danny Elfman to do that. He's the only man to do it. And directed by action director, superstar Dick Donner.
Director Dick Donner, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, one thing they did in this one, which again, not in any of the stories, which probably wasn't the original story, which I thought was really neat, was like when they do the future. And he looks at basically how he corrupted his girlfriend. Like,
Well, because she continues throughout the story. In the other ones, you don't see his love interest past the past. You don't see her in the present. But now, since the Karen Allen character is still here, he has tarnished her spirit and made her cold like him. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then when he looks at the ghost, he says, that was a mean thing. You know, that hit him
hard. I love his burial scene, too. That's very close to that scene where they're doing the whole future thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Him ending up in the coffin. And burning and everything. I thought that was really poignant. I thought that was really nice. That was a scene that almost
that
brought a tear to my eye.
Yeah, that was intense.
All the Christmas Carol adaptations, he finishes up his spirit journey by something around his grave. He falls into the grave.
Or he sees the tombstone.
But in this one, he's inside being cremated, right? Which is, by the way, you don't cremate a really nice casket like that. That's okay, creative license. But, he was inside of it. He's banging on the lid and then he's out. He's okay.
Yeah, because he's banging and it's the elevator doors, they open up and he's there with Elliot Loudermilk
and he's like, falls out there
and so are you. He's going,
hallelujah, hallelujah.
Exactly.
Let's go, Milkman, we're doing this together.
Here's a little known fact.
Okay,
this was the last performance by the Solid Gold Dancers.
I knew it was the Solid Gold Dancers. I had no idea it was the last performance.
It was their last performance.
It was the only nipple slip performance.
The funniest bit toward the beginning there was, she can't wear this, you can see
That's
her nipples. And the two stagehands are there and go, they can't see them, and they're really looking.
And I think the way this movie ended was one of my favorite Christmas Carol endings of all time. The fact that he's on the stage live to the world.
Yeah.
He brings Karen Allen out there. Oh, it's like boating a Marlin and, you know, whole world, Claire, whole world. And he starts the song. And that song was so infectious during that era. Everybody was listening to it. Annie Lennox and Al Green, which totally threw me. I thought it was Aretha Franklin when I was rewatching this. Oh. But it's just such a beautiful moment. It's one of those scenes where, you know, Ferris Bueller had recently come out and did the whole after credits talking to the audience thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's doing that same thing here. Let me hear from the real men. Let me hear from the women, the left side of the audience. Right. It just made me, that's the scene that I tear up in every time in this movie, because at that point, it makes me want to be a better person when he's going through that part.
Well, actually, the part that hit me the hardest is when he sees the frozen homeless guy that he didn't give money to.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Bill Murray, I think that's one of his best acting scenes.
Just that little segment.
When he's in there, because you can see he's like angry and he's hurt, you know, and he's yelling at this body. He's like, yo, why didn't you do this? You know, she would have helped you. And, you know, that scene itself, I was like, oh my God, that's just like.
It just goes to add the little more gravitas to what is ostensibly a comedy, but it's serious. And there are stakes. And so it proves to him, it really drives home, it's not just about what I do, it's what I do and how it impacts others. And that's the Christmas Carol story, ultimately.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. You said, George, redemption and understanding how you relate to the world and how much you can do that can help other people that isn't that big of a drain on you if you just open up your heart to it. And that's really what they're getting across. And it does it in all four of these, especially in this one.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got an odd question for the two of you.
Okay.
I'm ready.
So
lay it on me.
These stories are all about Scrooge. Bob Cratchit. It maybe is a secondary character, but mostly about Scrooge and his redemption.
Yeah.
I could ask you who's the best Scrooge out of the four, but there's no point in that because we know it's Bill Murray. Regardless, I think it's interesting to talk about some of the sub-characters, and I'm wondering, who do you guys think is the best set of ghosts from the four adaptations that we talked about today?
To me, it's easy. That's Scrooge. I mean, they did such a great job with it, in my opinion. They had multi-layers. They were original, but they were still in the spirit of the original, no pun intended, of the original ghosts. What do you think, John?
You know, I think Scrooge is a close second for me, but
okay.
And it's not just because they're puppets, but I really think the Muppet Christmas Carol. I really liked the Muppets in these roles. And I think it's because of how they use the different kinds of Muppet characters from the different Muppet universes. And puppetry is a creative process, and seeing how they chose which either characters to use, like Statler and Waldorf, or which styles of puppets, like, oh, this one's going to be a full body puppet, or this is going to be the Dark Crystal, like we said.
Or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, and not the performance. I think the performances probably are definitely better in Scrooge, but my favorite puppets, my favorite ghosts from any of these Christmas Carol adaptations is probably the Muppet Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
George, what about you? Your question? I think we probably know your answer.
I think it's the obvious answer, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's Scrooge. obviously, but for a couple of different reasons. Number one, there's a juxtaposition that happens with the Ghost of Christmas Present in this film that doesn't happen in the other films. Traditionally, Ghost of Christmas Present is always a bigger character or a giant.
Mm-hmm.
However, in this movie, we get the smallest actor out of all of them, Carol Kane, as the Ghost of Christmas Present. And I think she delivers on the role in such a way that I think a lot of people are going to have a harder time remembering the puppet from the Muppet Christmas Carol versus Carol Kane from Scrooged. Mm-hmm.
True.
Then you've got David Johansen. I think his character is mostly about your history and your history of regret specifically. And what's more regrettable than a falling down drunk cigar smoking cabbie in New York City?
Yeah.
He's a standout for sure.
You have the Ghost of Future, which is always supposed to be this silent, deathly figure.
Mm-hmm.
Of the four films, I still think that this Ghost of Christmas Future, and there were two of them in this one, by the way. There was the one in the interior story and the one in the story we were watching.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think the Ghost of Christmas Future in this frightened me more than the Ghost of Christmas Futures in any of the other three adaptations we watched. So that's why I think this set of ghosts is the best.
That. I mean, I definitely think the Ghost of Future Christmas, or talked about before, like with that TV screen, and then you see him, like when he's pointing, you see the screen is showing him pointing and Bill Murray walking down. You know, I just thought that was just a cool device that they picked on that. Whoever came up with that idea.
And in Scrooged, there's a lot of puppetry going on in the Ghost of Christmas Future, so that's cool too.
There you go.
So you got that going for you.
He's a puppet too. Yeah.
I'll give you your puppets if you go with
thank
my
you.
House.
There you go. Not bad. That's why it's a close second. It's earned it.
Okay. It had a puppet.
Yep. Hey, so as we wind up this backtrack, looking back at adaptations of A Christmas Carol, it just really goes to show you this is a story that it's timeless because you see how easily it can be mapped to all these different genres or attitudes, or for kids or for adults or as a straight up comedy. It's just a good redemption story that you can weave in any kind of thing. And it's certainly one that impacted us growing up as Gen Xers, just as it did generations before us. And no doubt those going forward.
Yeah, for sure.
That is going to wrap it up for this edition of the Gen X Grown Up Backtrack. We're going to be back in 2 weeks with another backtrack, of course, but next week is a regular edition of our show. Until then, I am John. George, thank you so much for being here, man.
Yes, sir.
Mo, you know, I appreciate you.
Oh, Merry Christmas, man.
Merry Christmas to you and all of our fourth listeners. We will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. Washing shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be
french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up. The Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, is that the, no, is it, who's the fairy like one? That.
That's fairy oh, is past.
The, oh, past, right, yeah, so, yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to do this one, not you.
Okay. No, I think I was going to see a fight through the screen here.
No, I just fuck with you, because I knew you wanted it so bad.
I just hang up, that's all, no fight.
Well, hey, podcast listener, my name is Vince, and I'm the host of a show called The RR Show. It stands for Reddit Readings. We're going to sit down twice a week, and I'm going to bring you the most entertaining stories from all of the best subreddits that exist online. Things like malicious compliance, petty revenge, hey, lady, I don't work here. Oh, there's so much more. Lots of great stories and things you won't believe. Like the one time this dude was caught in a bathroom with his friend and he was slapping them because that was the only way that he could actually legitimately help them. A mall cop comes in with a taser. Oh, yeah. The rest is history. It's going to be fun. There is, I don't know. I got like 20 seconds left, so I don't got much more time to tell you another story. But just join me on The RR Show. It's from Evergreen Podcast, produced in partnership with Wessler Media. So The RR Show. Wherever you get podcasts, subscribe today. And it's like an adult story time. Let's hang out together. The RR Show. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts.